Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Of course, the headlines coming out of Washington, D.C. are all about Congress, the president, and the duty to deal with the debt ceiling. And obviously, Congress has a role to play when it comes to paying the bills, bills that were passed by Congress. And often, as we've been in the midst of the state debate, we've heard all kinds of things about the 14th Amendment. We've talked about the president just doing it on his own. And the real question is, in all of these headlines that we're seeing out there, how many of them are really truthful? How many are misleading? And how many will actually lead us to the solution we're looking for? Let's begin.
Think you know the news of the day? Think again with Boyd Matheson on KSL News Radio.
Well, a lot of arguments are being made about the debt ceiling, the debt and deficit spending debate, and a lot of those can be pretty misleading. They can sound great. They're wonderful sound bites, but often they're a little bit misleading. And so as we continue through the negotiation process, we always turn to our good friend James Wallner, senior fellow at the R Street Institute, a lecturer in the Department of Political Science at Clemson University. And James, welcome back to the show. And you had a great piece in The Hill today talking about some of these misleading things that are coming out across the board as it relates to the debt limit.
Well, thanks for having me. You know, this is something that just happens time and time again. It never ceases to amaze me that we have these same conversations over and over again. And I think the debt limit is one of those great examples of how, you know, Congress just keeps repeating itself over and over.
Yeah. And as we look at this particular round and raising the debt limit, the negotiations about spending cuts or prioritization of spending, give us a sense of that. And then let's get to the nitty gritty of what's real, what's true, what's just misleading out there.
Well, the first thing is that the government hit its debt limit back in January, but we've been able to continue to fund our activities and pay interest on our current debt, which is $31.4 trillion, by employing a series of so-called extraordinary measures. And those measures are going to run out in June. And so if Congress doesn't raise the debt by the time those measures run out, it will have to operate on incoming revenue, which there is incoming revenue, and it'll have to choose what to use that incoming revenue to do, because it's not enough to pay for everything. And what we know it will do based on what administration officials in the past have testified before Congress about, is it will use that incoming revenue to pay interest on the debt because it doesn't want to default. And we're not going to default because we have more than enough revenue to pay interest on the debt. And then it will delay payments to the guy who cuts the grass on the National Mall, to congressional staffers, to others in the federal government, and other kinds of activities that the federal government spends money on. You're not going to be able to buy, you know, a bunch of office supplies potentially if we hit the debt limit and we have to operate on incoming revenue for a while.
And so I want to break those two things down just real quickly, just for our listeners, that one, very important to note, we already hit the debt limit. We hit the ceiling in January. And so we're there. We've been using these extraordinary measures and some, loopholes and gimmicks that come from the accounting world to keep everything rolling. And then also very important, James points out that there's still money coming in. The most challenging day for the federal government is the first day of the month. And just like many of us, that's when the rent's due. That's when the big bills are due. After that, money keeps coming in, and it's about prioritizing, just as you would if you were kind of out of money. You'd prioritize which debts to pay, which vendors to pay, and so on. And Congress has to, the government has to do the same thing. Now, I want to get
right
to that. Oh, go ahead, James.
Well, I would just say that also there on June 15th, there's a big quarterly tax payment that's coming for everybody who's a small business owner who pays quarterly. That's a lot of revenue that's going to be coming in. And I just want to reassure your listeners that delaying payments for a contractor is not the same as a default. In fact, the extraordinary measures that we have been employing since January are delays in payments for government accounts. We are, in essence, doing the things that some are fear-mongering about and saying that is a default. It's not a default. Not paying your mortgage is a default. Not paying your cable bill is not good, but you're going to be able to get cable again when you pay your bill, when you figure out how to tighten your belt, right? It's not the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such an important point, because there is, the sky is falling. Nobody's going to get paid anything. There's money coming in. There'll be money going out. The first of the month is hard. The 15th is great because more money comes in. There's actually a great graph on the Washington Post that talks about which days of the month are the hardest for the government to meet and which ones the government has all kinds of surplus because they aren't making payments on those days. So that's a fascinating thing. Now, I want to get to this next component to this, James, because a lot of people have been saying, well, look, Congress has to do this because this is money that's already been spent, and Congress already said we were going to spend it, and so they just have to do this by default.
Right, and that is a very pernicious line of argument, because what it says is that what happened in the past, what Congress did in the past, Congress in the future has no choice but to go along with it, that the people we elect to represent us, for whatever reason, are powerless, that they can't change their mind, that new representatives who come in are bound by decisions of the past. And that just completely undermines the principle of American self-government and makes it, in essence, impossible.
Yeah, so important. And you talk about this in your piece that, you know, the number of new senators, the numbers of new members of Congress who clearly were not around. I think you said, 74 new House members from the time a lot of this spending was done. These people surely can't be held accountable for the last one. And then, of course, the current Congress can't bind the next Congress, which is also an important thing to understand.
But because the people who are ultimately sovereign and in charge around here, they get to change their mind. We can change our mind. Even if we voted for spending in the past, we can change our mind if, say, like Medicare, the cost estimates are 165% higher than it was when we first started, right? This is on autopilot. But I think even more pernicious is that most of this spending is done by putting things in big omnibus bills, waiting until the last minute, not letting lawmakers have an opportunity to amend bills, to offer and adjudicate the concerns of their citizens, of their constituents on those bills. So they set up the debate in such a way that it's inevitable that the bill passes. And then later on, when you find yourself at the debt limit debate, they say, well, we've already approved all this spending. This is not the time to debate this. Wait until we then debate spending. But they don't let you debate spending. And then they tell you now you have no choice but to approve more debt to pay for that spending.
Yeah. And let's just go back to just walk that through. So last year, Congress did not do its job as it's supposed to in terms of passing the appropriations bills and to fund the government in September. They kicked the can to December. And then, as you mentioned, James, in December, there's this big omnibus spending package, this continuing resolution. And also interesting to note that in that, the Democrats were in control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, and clearly could have raised the debt ceiling as part of that big behemoth package that nobody read or understood. But they didn't. They chose not to. And as you described it, now we're in this place where they're saying, well, you know, we can't debate these or we can't negotiate these things together. They have to be separate. It seems like they've had that opportunity, and they've actually done that in the past.
That's right. And also, there's a distinction between debt and spending. The Constitution singles these two powers out. The 14th Amendment singles these two powers out. Congress has the power to raise, to borrow money, to have more debt, and it has the power to spend money. But just because Congress decides to spend money doesn't then bind it and say that you now have to borrow money and debt in order to pay for that spending. The whole thing is just completely inconsistent with our constitutional system of government.
Yeah, and give us just a quick 30 seconds. How do you see it playing out over the next couple of days?
Well, I would imagine we're going to wait up until the last minute. Like always, there will be a deal. The deal will purportedly cut spending, but just like the BCA, spending that ended the 2011 standoff, spending will just keep going up. Spending has not gone down. And we will find ourselves in this exact same predicament again in the near future.
James Wallner, senior fellow at the R Street Institute, lecturer at the Department of Political Science at Clemson University. James, thanks for breaking that down. Give us a real clear perspective as what's real, what's not, what's misleading, and how do we march this thing forward. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. That's some important stuff in there in terms of all the rhetoric that we hear from both sides of the aisle. And then what's actually real in terms of where we are, what has happened in the past, and what needs to happen now. A lot of the statements, again, coming from both sides of the aisle, are They may not be outright lies, but they're misleading in terms of what can be done and how it needs to be done, and that Congress needs to be the one that's doing it. Remember, we hit the debt ceiling in January. We already hit it. We're using extraordinary measures to just stay afloat. And that's probably what's going to happen if it were to go to January 1st. I agree with James. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we'll see a deal late Friday or early Saturday morning. And then the process part will continue on from there.
Think again on Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.